Man Who Would Be King, written by Rudyard Kipling, narrated by B.J. Harrison. Brother to a prince and fellow to a beggar, if he be found worthy. The law, as quoted, lays down a fair conduct of life, and one not easy to follow. I have been fellow to a beggar again and again, under circumstances which prevented either of us finding out whether the other was worthy. I have still to be brother to a prince, though I once came near to kinship with what might have been a veritable king, and was promised the reversion of a kingdom, army, law courts, revenue, and policy all complete. But today, I greatly fear that my king is dead, and if I want a crown, I must go and hunt it for myself. The beginning of everything was in a railway train upon the road to Mahau from Ajmer. There had been a deficit in the budget, which necessitated traveling, not second class, which is only half as dear as first class, but by intermediate, which is very awful indeed. There are no cushions in the intermediate class, and the population are either intermediate, which is Eurasian, or native, which, for a long night journey, is nasty, or loafer, which is amusing, though intoxicated. Intermediates do not patronize refreshment rooms. They carry their food in bundles and pots, and buy sweets from the native sweetmeat sellers, and drink the roadside water. That is why in the hot weather, intermediates are taken out of the carriages dead, and in all weathers are most properly looked down upon. My particular intermediate happened to be empty till I reached Nazirabad, when a huge gentleman in shirt sleeves entered, and following the custom of intermediates, passed the time of day. He was a wanderer and a vagabond like myself, but with an educated taste for whiskey. He told tales of things he had seen and done, of out-of-the-way corners of the empire into which he had penetrated, and of adventures in which he risked his life for a few days' food. "If India were filled with men like you and me, not knowing more than the crows where they'd get their next day's rations, it isn't 70 millions of revenue the land would be paying. It's 700 million, said he. And as I looked at his mouth and chin, I was disposed to agree with him. We talked politics, the politics of loaferdom, that sees things from the underside, where the lath and plaster is not smoothed off. And we talked postal arrangements, because my friend wanted to send a telegram back from the next station to Ajmer, which is the turning-off place from the Bombay to the Mahau line as you travel westward. My friend had no money beyond 8 annas, which he wanted for dinner, and I had no money at all, owing to the hitch in the budget before mentioned. Further, I was going into a wilderness where, though I should resume touch with the treasury, there were no telegraph offices. I was, therefore, unable to help him in any way. "We might threaten a station master and make him send a wire on tick," said my friend, "but that'd mean inquiries for you and for me, and I'd got my hands full these days. Did you say you were traveling back along this line within any days?"
"Within 10, I said.
"Can you make it 8? Said he. "Mine is rather urgent business."
"I can send your telegram within 10 days, if that will serve you," I said.
"I couldn't trust the wire to fetch him, now I think of it. It's this way. He leaves Delhi on the 23rd for Bombay. That means he'll be running through Ajmer about the night of the 23rd.
"But I'm going into the Indian desert," I explained.
"Well and good," said he. "You'll be changing at Marwar Junction to get into Jodhpur territory."
"You must do that.
And he'll be coming through Marwar Junction in the early morning of the 24th by the Bombay mail. Can you be at the Marwar Junction on that time? It won't be inconveniencing you, because I know that there's precious few pickings to be got out of these central India states, even though you pretend to be a correspondent of the backwoodsman."